Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rainer's Radio, practical training for joint heirs with Christ, with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good evening, and welcome to Rainer's Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host, and we're continuing to talk about tithing and giving and what the scriptures say. We've been moving into grace, the time that we're living in now, where there's a full conversion from trying to fulfill the law in order to have a relationship with God, into a relationship with God based on grace, that he made the way for us to have that relationship. And since he's the one who did it, it was done completely and perfectly. There's nothing else we need to do to add or correct or sustain in order to have and enjoy and maintain a spiritual relationship with God. He made us new. He gave us new spirit being. We are now a spirit being and part of him as spirit. So that's not something that, regardless of what we may be doing in our soul or even in our body, does not separate the new spirit being from God. We are born of spirit. That which is born of spirit is spirit. So we are one in spirit. Our problem is, of course, that the same soul that we had and body that we had the day before we were re-inspirited is the same soul and body, for the most part, that we have the day after. Now, a lot of times, God does wonderful things in our soul, in our body. He provides healing and wisdom and understanding and all kinds of meets needs in ways that we never, didn't even know we had a need. But the basic soul that we had with trying to maintain control is the same soul. So our soul will continue to try to do things the way it always has. And the way it always has is according to law, doing things productively, doing things according to our own temperament, our own understanding, our own history. So even if God says, you don't need to do any of that, our soul says, but I want to. I want to try to measure up. I want to do things the right way. I want to do things the way they should be done. Or I want to do things that make me feel good. Or that will please others. Or fill in the blank. The way you functioned the day before you were born again, experience salvation, your soul wants to stay there. So in this area, in this finance area, we want to, our soul was gratified in tithing. There is something about, okay, I've given or I've tithed my 10%, whether it's gross or net or whatever, to the church, I can check that off my list. Look what I've done. I've done something that God said I should do. So I've done this, and it's done. And we have a sense of control, and sometimes there's an expectation, whether it's about what God is then going to do, or now that I've, since I'm tithing, I have an influence or citizenship in the church. And even though all those things in the Old Testament were absolutely accurate. Those things were true. By you accomplishing not just tithing, but the long list of 300 other things that you all needed to do in order to have that relationship, but if you could check those all off, that entitled you to a certain standing with God and with others. And we see, and we will see, a great example of that in Saul of Tarsus, where he considered himself righteous because he could take that list of 300 things and check them all off. He did not just the letter of the law, but as far as he was concerned, the spirit of the law as well. Even with all that, though, it did not change him. Checking off every item on the list did not gain him a relationship, a satisfying relationship with God. And that's part of what God does with us, is he gives us an emptiness, a lack, so that we will not be satisfied with where we are. And we all know what happened to him, and we won't go into that now. We may at some point. But the point being that it's there. We want to hold on to our own notion of tithing because it gives our soul a sense of control. And that's something that our soul has longs to have, and it is based on our history. It's the way it always has been historically for each one of us until we change that history. And we've all experienced that. Something is fine with God until it isn't. Until he says, you can't get away with this anymore. We live with it. Even if we aren't sure whether it's pleasing to him or part of our new nature is a better way of putting it, we will continue it until he puts his finger on it in whatever way he chooses to do that and says, okay, now we're going to deal with this. And it could be anything from an unhealed wound to an area in our life where we rely on our temperament. Either way, it's his timing. And let's look at timing for a second. We all know that there are times and seasons in our life. Times in our life when things are going really well, when we feel close to God, when we feel like we are experiencing his blessings or inheritance. And then there's other times when we feel like he's a million miles away. And there's a real emptiness, and we're discouraged, and we're not sure if we've done something to displease him. And we may know in our mind and in our hearts know that that's not the case. He may feel or seem far away. And as we are looking back over our history, we see those times and seasons ebb and flow. Well, those same times and seasons happen historically, where God has chosen times and seasons and ages to reveal himself in different ways, where he's blatant and obvious and moves miraculously and personally, and other times when he draws away, when he pulls back, times when he speaks through people, and others where times when he doesn't, when there's a silence. And he has his purpose for each one of those. If we're wise, we realize that the times of silence is often when he is doing the greatest work. But just as we can look back at our own lives and see those times ebb and flow, and just have that confidence based on past history, we can see him doing that historically as well. and gain confidence that even though we may think or it may seem like he's not doing anything or he has withdrawn because we've done something wrong, on a larger scale, this perhaps we think this is the age where something big is going to happen because he seems to be silent or not speaking in the way we or intervening in the way we expect him to. But if we look back, historically speaking, over the way God works in civilizations and in history, we're still here, and he's still here. And whatever is going on in civilization and culture and on the world stage, that doesn't intervene or interfere or obstruct our personal relationship with him. We could even go as far as to say that we can feel like we're right in the middle of great defeat and despair and even depression, and yet be right in the middle of a great victory. Because all those things, our circumstances, our feelings, our thoughts, are not good indicators of how we're doing. Reality is an indicator of how we're doing. Are we in relationship with God based on his activity in our life, not ours, not our circumstance? But if he has made himself known to us, revealing himself to us, drawing us to him, we can then trust that what he has begun in us, he will finish. And we often interpret that silence, that he's not doing something, that he's letting things go wrong, or when we ask for, you know, even Lord, are you even there? And there's a silence, we try to interpret it. Rather than just accepting that if we have asked for his input, if we have asked, Lord, is there anything you want to talk to me about? And if we have learned how to test what we hear, to be able to recognize when there is interference and how to deal with that, then when there is silence, we can have that confidence that, no, we're just in a holding pattern while God does his thing. And we can be confident that our spirit is fully active with him. And the vast majority of time when those silences occur, it's because all our spirit is doing is being involved in what God is doing. And it doesn't have time to reveal or talk or discuss things with the soul, with our soul. So your spirit is always fully engaged in everything God is doing, whether it's being silent and still or active globally or even universally. Most of the time, God doesn't reveal his plans to us because we would try to help. And guess what? This is one of those things that we think we should know what he's doing so we could pray right, so we could do the right thing, so we could be involved. But contrary to popular opinion, he does not need our help. He is God. He lets us help. And there are times and seasons when he reveals what he's doing. But he doesn't reveal what he's doing so we can help, but so we can enjoy the process, so we can see his heart, so we can be joined soul and spirit, because again, your spirit already knows everything that he's doing in your life, in this world, in this time, and your spirit is in full agreement and fully enjoying it. Again, it's back to our soul. The problem is the schism, the chasm, the Grand Canyon between our soul and our spirit. So it's that self-life, that those crutches that we have built up, those wounds that are still yet to be healed. Those are the things that God is dealing with us on an individual basis. So that's where we come back full circle to talking about tithing. And when we remember that in the Old Testament, the tithing was never referred to as an individualized thing. It was always in a list of these are the things, and just from the very beginning, at first it was, you know, there were 10 laws given. Then by the end of the Old Testament, there were 300 and some things that you had to do in order to have relationship with God by pleasing him. And one of those things was tithing. Then there's offerings and animal sacrifice and not working on the Sabbath and who you marry and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But tithing is on a long list of things. So now that we are in the New Testament, the new relationship with God, based on his creating a new relationship, salvation, this is one of the reasons it's such a struggle to let go of having to tithe, having to accomplish a certain set of requirements, is because historically, that's the way it's always been. There's always been a requirement, not just in Judaism, but in every religion. That's part of being part of a religion are the rituals, the rites, the sacrifices, the prayers. That's part of the something that our human psyche yearns for, is it gives us our place in the world to relate to a god or gods in certain ways. And if you sacrifice this and you pray this and you do this and you give that, then you will receive the blessing from that particular god. And there's something within us that this gives us a sense of our being in this world. It gives us a sense of identity. So this is not something unique to being a Christian, that giving up the desire or need to tithe, to feel that that gives us a place in our church or our fellowship or Christianity, that's not surprising that we really have to have a mindset change. And this goes back to if you and God decide it's fine for you to tithe or to give 10%, that's fine. You are free to do that. Odds are God at some point in time is going to touch on that with you and want to talk to you about that, but maybe not, and that's fine. The whole point that we always come back to is, what is God saying to you about anything? Are your wounds being healed? Is your ability to hear him growing? Are you gaining confidence in being able to deal with any interference from the world system, from your own flesh, from the devil and the demonics? Are you growing in your ability and confidence? Are you becoming more content with your relationship with God? And yet, is he also stirring up a hunger and a thirst for him? So as we look at this one aspect in the totality of our relationship with him, we see that this is just a small aspect of our relationship. And yet, because it's finances, because it's money, it's important to God how we treat finances and tithing, because it's important to us. If it's not important to you, guess what? He's probably dealing in a totally different way with you. If you're having relationship problems, that's what's important to you right now. Generally speaking, we can say God intervenes in our life in three areas: in finances, health, or relationships. And it's very rare for everything to be going great in all three of those areas. But since those are the areas that are important to us, that's where we can see God moving in our lives. So keep an eye out for what's going on in each one of those areas and start talking to him in those terms. You could even say, okay, I'm going to have three times to talk to him each day, and I'm going to dedicate each one of those times to one of those areas. Again, that's your physical well-being, your health, your finances, and relationships. For most of us, those are the three areas when something starts to go wrong or right in one of those areas, that is significant for us. So coming back to, now we're entering into the time of grace, where we can simply receive from God everything he wants to give us without thinking we have to do something in return. We receive and simply say thanks. Not, okay, now God has equipped me in this area and I need to go out and minister. Or God has given me this revelation so I can start a new church. Or fill in the blank. But simply, God reveals himself. God gives himself to us through our spirit, revealing to our soul. And grace just says thanks. So this is, you can see how this affects the whole concept of our thinking about tithing. We no longer have those list of 300 things we need to do in order to have a relationship with God. Now the requirement, all those 300 things, has been totally fulfilled and erased and torn up. The contract has been torn up because it's been fulfilled. It's like once you pay off a loan, you get the original loan back. So it's paid in full. You don't need to keep paying on it. It's a done deal. It's that relationship no longer exists. And that's what happened when Jesus died on the cross. He paid off that debt. And it no longer exists. That debt does not define our relationship with God any longer. Our relationship with him is now described by grace, by being one in him and being a joint heir with his son, a co-inheritor of everything. Everything that Jesus inherited, we inherited. We are in him. And just as he said, he and the Father are one. Guess what? If we're in the Son, we likewise are one in the Father. Now, of course, we have a ways to go in what is that look like, feel like, be like. Our souls are still in such a long transition, but that's what is changing, not our relationship with God. How our soul is able to accept reality of who God is and who we are as a spirit, that changes, but not our spiritual relationship with God. And this is part of our problem, is we confuse our soul and our spirit. So we think of, you know, that this is a spiritual problem, and it's not. It's a soulical problem. And we'll get back into that again when we restart the cycle. But let's go back to this whole tithing. What was introduced in that transition period was the whole idea of an introduction to grace through Jesus Christ, that Jesus would be intervening in every aspect by fulfilling every aspect of the law. So in the fullness of times, under grace, let's look at tithing, the priesthood, and Melchizedek. Now, this is in Hebrews, chapter 6, verse 19 through chapter 7, 22, and then chapter 8, verse 6. Follow along with me in your Bible if you want. Otherwise, and again, it's difficult reading this on the radio, but the whole point is that the book of Hebrews describes that even before the law, Levites, the tribe of the priesthood, tithed to Melchizedek, who was the priest of the Most High God. And Melchizedek is usually used as a typography for Jesus. Both Melchizedek and Jesus were in the progeny of Abraham. So with this illustration, the stage was set for starting the new, unchangeable, perfect covenant. And this is another aspect of understanding time, that time, God created time, and he is not bound by it. And just as what we experience is when we accept our new spirit being, we do that through experiencing what Jesus experienced. We go back and join him on the cross and join him throughout his experience. And when he is raised, we are raised with him. And as we accept that, just as we go back and join Jesus, we are also in the same genetics, if you will, of everyone who came before him, in David and in Abraham. So we can all of us in Abraham. In other words, if Abraham didn't have any kids, we would not be here. Spiritually, soulically, however, physically, however you want to describe that. But the promises given to Eve came through Abraham, at least partially. So to now that we claim those promises, we put ourselves as a recipient of everything that was promised to Abraham, so that everything Abraham did, for better or for worse, for blessing or for cursing, are things we have to deal with. So when we start looking at the actions Abraham did and the priesthood and every aspect of the law that was given to the Israelites, which then led to the Messiah, which brought us in as fulfillment of the promise that was given to Eve, that the sun, that the heel of the sun would strike our enemy, then we see the fullness of our participating in each one of those both blessings and curses. Through Abraham, all the way to the Messiah, Jesus. So we'll see how far we get. We're not going to get very far, but at least I want to start thinking about the introduction of how we were represented in Abraham and in Melchizedek. In Abraham, we were represented as the law bowing to Melchizedek, who was the typology of Jesus. So since we are in Jesus and we're in the law, we are on both sides. We both give the tithe and receive the tithe. So let's just at least start a little bit and start with Hebrews 6. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated king of righteousness, and then also king of Salem, meaning king of peace, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. So we'll pick it up here next week. But what I want you to think about is the whole role of time, how we can't bring how God did things in the Old Testament into a new relationship and think that there's the new, there's just more requirements. Everything changed. And this isn't the first time that everything changed in our relationship with God. And just to start dwelling on, spend some time in Hebrews and start seeing how God treated time. So thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to drop me a line at diane@therainersclub.org. Till next week, this has been Diane Thomas of Rainers Radio. Have a great night.